Good evening. This is Griffin Bancroft of CBS Radio News, recording in Washington. The McCarthy Army hearings went through another long day today with McCarthy's chief counsel, Roy Cohn, on the stand, this time for round-robin questioning, which ranged from extremely friendly questioning by McCarthy, generally friendly by Republican senators, generally unfriendly by Democratic senators, and extremely unfriendly questioning by Army Counsel Joseph Welch. While the immediate issue is charges between the McCarthy side and the Army side, questioning kept more and more reverting to that larger issue, the power of the executive to withhold information from the legislative branch of the government. And the committee went off on its usual number of tangents and got into its usual number of altercations over monitored telephone calls, over committee records of Private David Shine. And it also heard a charge by Senator McCarthy that communists are infiltrating the Central Intelligence Agency and hydrogen bomb plants. But for the story of the day with recordings, here is my colleague, Bill Costello.
The day began with questions to Roy Cohn about his personal history. Democratic Senator Jackson of Washington, in his turn, inquired about Cohn's law career, especially about his outside income, in the following exchange.
Are you a member of a law firm now?
Yes, I am, sir.
I read something in one of the magazine articles which would indicate that your income from the firm for 1 year would be much greater than that, without mentioning the amount, much greater than that which you'd received from the federal government. Is that
right, sir?
Is that correct?
That is correct, sir. I would say this, if I may. I think my income from my private practice and the clients I have there is greater than the income I receive here, and is probably a lot smaller than the income I could receive if I were devoting full-time to private practice, and probably a lot greater than it will be when I could finally get back to private practice. And
well, I don't doubt that, Mr. Cohn. I'm not saying it in any sarcastic vein at all. You're an able lawyer, and I know that you can make a lot more out. But what I wanted to ask you was that you state that you've done very little private work, but your income from your private practice is much greater than that.
Well, sir, I understood your question to be experience. The bulk of what practice I have a chance to do does not involve appearance in court and does not involve things which I would say would give me experience in the trial of cases or the argument of appeals. It would involve things other than that, sir.
Well, since you've been working for the committee, have you spent much time in your private practice with your own private law firm?
Very little, sir.
Very little?
Yes, sir.
Republican Senator Potter of Michigan reverted to the charges of improper pressure originally filed on both sides, asking Mr. Cohn what he thought should happen if certain specific charges were true, and if they were false, what then? Potter asked,
if those charges were true, would you consider that a serious charge?
Oh, sir, I would certainly say any abuse of power on the part of this committee or any member of its staff would certainly be a very serious matter which should be dealt with by the committee. I don't say, sir, it should be dealt with by the committee in some way.
To follow that question up.
Yes, sir.
If those charges were true.
Yes, sir.
Would you feel that your services as chief counsel of the committee should cease?
Sure.
Now, if those charges are false, do you agree with me that an unconscionable act has been committed by some members of the Army?
Sir, it's, once again, I've been trying to avoid characterizing. I certainly think that if you ask me directly, the act would be unconscionable, and I think it was unconscionable, and I think it is unconscionable.
You see, if the charges are not true.
Yes, sir.
That they made.
Yes,
it's
sir.
It's an unconscionable act.
Yes, sir.
By somebody.
Yes, sir.
And that the persons responsible for that act should, do you agree with me, should no longer hold their position of public trust.
Sir, that's a little high for me to pass on, and I would rather not pass any kind of judgment on them.
The Army Counsel, Mr. Welch, finally got his first 10-minute turn. He took up the question of Roy Cohn's interest in Private G. David Shine's commission in the following exchange.
Mr. Cohn.
Yes, sir.
I was interested in Senator Dvorak's questions to you about what would have happened if Mr. Shine had procured a commission in the summer of 1953. You recall those questions?
Yes, sir.
Now, of course, in the summer of 1953, you were anxious to procure a commission for Mr. Shine, weren't you?
I thought he was qualified, sir. I was one of the
references. Would you mind answering the question? You were anxious to procure one, weren't you?
Sir, you say anxious to procure. I want to tell you this. I thought he was qualified. I recommended him. I was a reference on his application. Yes, sir.
Well, now, is that your answer? You were anxious
sir.
To procure one for him?
My answer is as I have given it to you, sir.
It was simple. Yes, sir, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
You were, weren't you?
I thought he was entitled
right.
to it, sir.
And you enlisted some pretty high-powered people to help get one, didn't you?
No, sir, I can't agree with your terminology there. That does not give a fair reaction.
Well, let's see.
Well, sir...
Let's see, Mr. Cole.
Sticking to your question, you say I enlisted certain high-powered people to help him get it. What happened was this, sir.
I don't ask you what happened. I ask you if you enlisted certain high-powered people. Did you or didn't you?
Sir...
Yes or no, did you or didn't you?
What is the high-powered people? Mr. Ross, I want to give you yes or no answers.
You don't want to or you do want to?
Mr. Welch, I'd like to give you yes or no answer.
All right. Let me start again, will you? The first
Mr.
conference...
Mr. Chairman, may I be permitted to complete one sentence?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to try to have this witness be responsive in his answer. And I would like to start again, if I may. Could I start again, Mr. Cohen, or would you like to make a speech now? If you would like to make a speech, make it.
No, sir. All I was going to tell you is this. I would like to give you responsive answers, and I would like to give you as many yes or no answers as I can. There are times, sir, when I cannot agree with some of the adjectives which you put in your question.
That
makes it difficult for me to give you the answer I would like to. If you wish to ask me, did I think Shine was qualified for a commission, and did I recommend him for one, my answer is yes, sir.
We've already covered that. You said you were anxious to get him one.
Didn't you? I told you what happened, sir.
Yeah, and you said you were anxious to get him one. Now, do you want to change that or stay by it?
Sir, I think my testimony is very clear to the committee as to just what happened and just what I
wanted. It was only a moment ago I said, yes or no, were you anxious to get him one? And you said yes. Do you want to change it or stay by it?
Sir, I want to leave stand exactly what I've said concerning the events of Mr. Shine's filing an application for a commission.
Well, you want me to go all over it again and ask you once more in simple English, were you anxious to get Shine a commission?
Sir, I can only tell you what happened. I can't take your word anxious.
Well, you were the only guy that would know what your own state of mind was. There's no trouble about it. I don't think it was immoral, but just were you anxious to get him on?
Sir, I thought he was qualified for it, and I recommended. You asked me, was I anxious? That is a difficult question for me to answer. I thought he was qualified for one. I recommended him for one.
But you can't tell us whether you were interested in the result.
Sure, I was interested in the result.
And you were interested affirmatively.
Yes, sir.
And you wanted him to get one.
Yes, sir.
Well, why did it take us so long?
The reason it takes so long, Mr. Welch, is, and I... You put some adjectives in your question, which is a little bit difficult for me to go along with.
Well,
I want to try, sir, to give you yes or no answers.
Now, you've finally done it. We're off at least to some kind of a start.
Yes, sir.
Now, the first conference that took place in respect to a commission for Shine took place in the office of a United States Senator, didn't it?
Yes, sir.
That's pretty high-powered stuff, isn't it? A senator. Is that right?
I can't answer that, sir.
And there was present in that office a general. Is that right?
General Reber was there, yes.
Yes. That's pretty high-powered stuff, isn't it?
Mr. Welch, I assume...
Oh, just yes or no. Is that high-powered or not?
Mr. Welch, I want to give you yes or no answer to...
Well, do so then. Just tell me, is that high-powered or not? Mr. Cohen, do you... No, Senator, I don't know
what he means by high-powered.
I think the chairman knows. Mr. Cohen, would you mind...
Mr. Cohen, would you mind asking a question? All right, if not, he can ask for more details as to what is meant by the adjective.
Yes, sir. Mr. Welch?
Let's strike out high-powered and start again. If you had a senator there, you had a very important public official there, didn't you?
Yes, sir. I think Senator...
And if you had a general there, you had a very important army official.
Yes, sir.
And if you had Mr. Cohn there, you had a very important counsel to an important committee there, didn't you?
The committee is important, sir.
Right. Do you think, Mr. Cohn, any ordinary little guy from my state of Iowa could command that sort of attention?
I hope so, sir.
Do you think he could?
Yes, sir.
The afternoon began with two enforced delays to answer Senate roll calls. Army Counsel Welch got back to the immediate issue by asking Cohn whether the Shine matter was the real cause of the Army-McCarthy eruption. Mr. Welch began...
Do I understand your position to be today that if Mr. Shine had gone over and got his uniform and his commission in July of 1953, that there still would have been the collision between the senator and the army?
Put it this way, sir, the collision between the senator and the army was not caused because of the Shine matter.
Well, then you can go right along with me, can't you?
Well, I suppose...
If Mr. Shine had got his commission on that hot July day...
Yes, sir.
...and come back proudly wearing it, you follow me?
Yes, sir.
You would still be of the opinion today that the collision between you and the army would have happened.
Well, sir, I say if it were not that thing, it probably would have been some other thing which the people who are behind this would have used, yes.
Do you mean to say, Mr. Cohn, that if there never had been any Mr. Shine, you today would have sat there and I today would have sat here?
I can't tell you that, sir.
You don't for one moment think that's even credible, do you?
Yes, I do, sir.
You think had there been no Shine in the world, you and I were just destined by fate to meet in this room with me asking the questions and you making the answers?
No, sir.
Well, then the answer is no, sir.
No, Mr. Welch, it's a little difficult for me to answer your questions.
Well, I hate to make them difficult for you, but that's what you seem to be telling me. Once again, had there been no Mr. Shine ever in the world, you were destined to have your collision with the army, and I was destined to ask you these questions. Is that right, sir?
No, sir.
That's silly, isn't it? That's silly to say that, isn't it?
What is that, sir?
That you and I would have met in this room if there never had been any Mr. Shine.
I don't know, sir.
Well, don't you know we couldn't possibly have met in this room except for that man?
I think we could have, sir.
With me asking these questions and you making these answers?
Yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Cohn, do you remember the day on which Dave Shine went over, as he put it, to hold up his hand and get his commission?
Who put it that way, sir?
Sir?
Did you say Mr. Shine says he said that?
No, it's been testified to in this room by General Reaver that he called up and said, may I come over and hold up my hand?
No, sir. I did not understand that General Reaver said any such statement had been made to him.
Well, it's in any event, were you aware of a day when Mr. Shine, let us say, took a taxi or some other equipage and went over to the Pentagon to be sworn in?
No, sir.
Did he ever tell you I'm going over there and I hope I'm going to come back with my commission?
No, sir.
Did you ever know that he went over there and applied for one?
Yes, sir.
Did he tell you he was going?
I don't recall whether he did or not. I know he went, sir. He might very well have told me before he went he was going.
He surely did, didn't he, Mr. Cohn? There isn't anything wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it.
Were you working very closely with him then?
Yes, sir.
And if he was going to take as much as an hour off to go over to the Pentagon and get his commission, you'd be apt to know it, wouldn't you?
I might or I might not.
Senator McCarthy, in his questioning, reverted to a subject uppermost in his mind, the right of congressional committees to obtain information from the executive branch. He observed to Mr. Cohn...
Mr. Cohn, one of the subjects that you and I have discussed a sizable number of times, I recall, is this question of just what authority the committee has to get information from the executive branch. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Now, I have seen statements emanating from the Justice Department, the White House, to the effect that the sole power to enforce the law is lodged in the executive. You and I have discussed that. We agree with that fully, don't we?
No doubt about it, sir.
I believe we also agree that there apparently is some confusion on the part of some between the question of the right to enforce the law on the part of the executive and the right of a congressional committee to get information if the law is not properly enforced, if there's malfeasance, misfeasance, graft, corruption, treason, etc.
Yes, sir.
I think you and I have gone over in detail the Reorganization Act and have agreed fully that you as chief counsel, I as the chairman, have no choice but to attempt to get information of any failure to properly enforce the law, any graft, any corruption, any dishonesty, any communist infiltration in the executive branch. Now, I have before me a statement issued by the White House this morning, June 2nd. It's entitled Statement by the President. It lists some very excellent accomplishments, indicates that our executive branch certainly is heading in the right direction. I think that you and I have always agreed that this administration has been heading in the right direction so far as the removal of communists is concerned. We may have had some question about the speed with which they were moving. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Cohen, under the Reorganization Act, as you interpreted, this committee has no choice but to attempt to get information to expose any wrongdoing, any misfeasance, any incompetence in the executive. That's the duty of the Congress under the Reorganization Act. Is that right?
That's right, sir.
If there is a law which says we cannot do that, of course, then you and I agree we cannot get the information.
Impossible.
I believe we have agreed, however, that there is no order of any bureau chief, any department head, which can nullify the Reorganization Act.
No, sir.
And if any bureau head, if any cabinet officer, anyone up to the president, including the president, signs an order, issues an order, which would make it impossible for the committee to do the job which it has been ordered to do under the Reorganization Act, we certainly are not bound by any such order. Is that correct?
It's still not with the infringement on the duties of the legislative branch.
The senior Democrat, Senator McClellan of Arkansas, posed a knotty question for Mr. Cohen. Whether it was more important to investigate 130-odd suspected communists in defense plants or expose an army secretary accused by McCarthy and Cohen of coddling communists and preventing their investigation. Senator McClellan asked in his booming drawl,
"If you've got such a man at the head of the United States Army that's coddling communists, trying to stop investigations of them, if he succeeds, don't you know more could get in than any committee could ever get out? And shouldn't we clean up at the top first?"
Well, sir, I'm afraid that this committee would not have the jurisdiction to do anything about Mr. Stevens or...
Mean it has no jurisdiction to investigate Mr. Stevens? If he's coddling communists?
Might have a jurisdiction to investigate it, sir, but I don't know what power the committee would have over...
Well, what power does any committee have after an investigation except to pass a law? It can't enforce anything. What power does it have? You know that it has no power other than to expose.
Well, it has the power to expose, call things to the
attention
of the public.
Well, don't you think he should be exposed?
Legislate. Well, sir, I probably don't have any wisdom on this subject at all.
I would think you should. You're the
Well, sir.
One of the chief communist investigators, I think you'd have a very fixed and unshakable opinion
on. Well, sir, my opinion, with great respect to you, is that if we could have the benefits of the distinguished gentlemen of this committee in uncovering communists and defense plans and other things which we have ready and not sitting here day in and day out on this, I feel with, since you pressed me for an opinion,
that
the national interest would much better be served.
And let Mr. Stevens go on and continue to serve at the top in Cumberland.
Sir,
you think that he served the interest of the country?
I have no opinion on Mr. Stevens continuing to serve or not, and there's nothing I or anyone else on the anyone with much more power than I have.
Do you have any opinion on the communists continuing to serve?
Yes, I do, sir.
All right, then why wouldn't you have an opinion on him continuing to serve if he's trying to prevent an investigation of communists in the military?
Sir, he is appointed by the President of the United States.
Well, so are the Army officers appointed by the President of the United States.
He's a cabinet member, the Secretary of the Army, and I don't think...
Oh, well, do you want to hold him immune?
No, I don't want to hold him immune, sir.
I don't either. That's why I want to get at the truth
right,
of
sir.
This.
I don't think the committee can do anything one way or the other about Mr. Stevens.
Well, it can expose him, can't it? If these charges are true, isn't that exposing him?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's what we should do, isn't it?
Well, sir,
don't you think so?
I certainly think it is unfortunate that the committee is tied up for these many weeks and months on this matter here when it could be investigating communists and communism.
Well, do you mean to tell me that a communist from some defense plant may be more dangerous to the security of this country than a man at the head of the army who's coddling them would be?
Oh, you're almost persuading me.
Well, I think I have.
The political overtones of these questions were obvious, and a long, acrimonious wrangle followed, with the Democrats demanding that the Defense Department be warned of the suspects in defense plants. Mr. Cohn parried with Senator McCarthy's help, and Army Attorney Welch joined in the Democratic appeal. He asked Mr. Cohn,
just for the purposes of safety, for fear something could be missed somewhere, would you mind, as a patriotic American citizen, sending the 130 names over to the FBI tonight? Let's be sure we're not taking any chances.
I wouldn't mind it at all, sir.
Will you do it, sir? No, I don't want to yield. I want to find out if he'll do it, and if he won't, will you do it, sir?
Mr. Chairman.
And, Mr. Chairman, if he won't, will the committee do it?
You asked a question. Will you let me answer it?
I asked it, sir.
All right. You asked me whether I would do it. I want you to know that the FBI has complete access to any files we have, any information we have at any time. Mr. Welch knows, I'm sure you do, Mr. Welch, that the FBI has no power to order anyone fired. You know that, for example, in the Alger Hiss case, the FBI had furnished all of the information, and he still rose to be a top man of the State Department. You know, Mr. Welch, that the FBI furnished all the information on the spy, Harry Dexter White. You know that despite that fact, Mr. Welch, despite the fact that the FBI had given all of the information and sent over reports day after day after day, Harry Dexter White, the communist spy, got to be a top Treasury official. So let's not deceive the American people by blaming the FBI for communists being in defense plans. The FBI has no power to get them out. We don't know at this time which ones are under surveillance. We don't know how badly J. Edgar Hoover may be disturbed or may not be disturbed by this. We do know, however, that from the 2.5-page memorandum that was submitted here the other day, that someone in the FBI was very, very deeply disturbed about communists in the radar laboratory. So let's not make the mistake, Mr. Welch, if we could agree on this, of trying to lead the American people to believe that the FBI can do anything beyond get the information. That's all they can do.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my confidence in the FBI is simply limitless, and I think Mr. Cohn's confidence is similar. Is that right, sir?
Yes, sir, that is right.
And all I'm suggesting is that we just nudge them a little and be sure they're busy on these 130. Would you mind helping nudge them?
Sir, You do not have to nudge the FBI about this or about anything else.
Then they've got the whole 130, have they, Mr. Cohen?
I am sure of it, sir, and a lot
well,
more.
Well, then what's all the excitement about if J. Edgar Hoover is on the job chasing these 130 communists?
Mr. Welch, all the excitement about is about the fact that even though J. Edgar Hoover has information on communist and government and defense plans, and that even though he has forwarded that information time and time again to the appropriate agencies and places, some of those agencies and places have failed to take action on the basis of reports submitted by Mr. Hoover.
Well, then, as a second line of defense, let's send the 130 names to the Department of Defense tonight. Would you mind doing that?
Whatever the committee directs on that, sir.
I wish the committee would direct that all the names be sent both to the FBI and to the Department of Defense with extreme suddenness.
Nearing the close, Senator Symington again expressed concern over the alleged communists and defense plans and wanted to know the source of the information about them. He asked Senator McCarthy.
May I ask if any of the information came in secret documents?
You might ask.
Well, I appreciate the courtesy of the senator from Wisconsin, and I'd like to get him on the record right now. Is he going to take the 133 names of these communists and, in the interest of the national security in this age of total peril against Soviet communism, give them tonight to the Secretary of Defense, or is he going to hold them until these hearings are over?
The senator should not ask such a silly question. The senator knows that the security officers who are charged with the security of these plants, as far as we know, have all the information which we have. Can I have the senator's attention?
I'm talking to my counsel. I'm not sorry. I'll state a fact.
Let me answer the senator's question. The senator says, will we give the Defense Department the information about the 130-odd communists? I want to tell the senator, as far as we know, the security officers have all the information which we have and more. However, if anyone from the Defense Department wants to come over and talk to members of my staff who are not immobilized in this hearing, they can do so. I will not order Mr. Cohen, who is testifying all day long, to spend his nights with the Defense Department or anyone else. I will not order anyone else who is immobilized by this hearing, but we do have sufficient staff, I believe, that if anyone from the Defense Department wants to go over and sit down with them, they may do that. And I sincerely hope that my good friend from Missouri, now that he learns the importance of these communist and defense plans, might advise the American people that they should disregard the advice he gave them last night to keep information about communists secret.
Chairman Mundt finally called for a vote on whether the special subcommittee should recommend to the regular committee that the 130-odd names be given to the Defense Department, and there was unanimous approval. But Senator McCarthy, as chairman of the regular committee, cast some doubt on his willingness to accept the recommendation. Now here again is Griffin Bancroft.
The hearings go on tomorrow with Cohn still the witness, and CBS Radio will again bring you recorded highlights at 10 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow night. Before tomorrow's public session, the committee will meet privately on several matters. It's expected to take up that motion recommending that those names of alleged subversives in defense plants be given to the Secretary of Defense. It will also take up privately the matter of releasing some testimony taken at previous private hearings. It has one specific request for release of some of this from a former principal in the case, Assistant Secretary of Defense Struve Hensel. Although dismissed, Hensel has asked that he be allowed to testify unless charges made against him are formally withdrawn. But Chairman Mundt tonight released a letter he wrote Hensel saying he didn't think anyone planned to make any sworn charges against him. If someone does, Mundt said, Hensel could testify. If not, Mundt suggested he try some other committee if he wished to reply to McCarthy's unsworn charges. This is Griffin Bancroft recording in Washington. This is the CBS Radio Network.